There are a handful of World Cup teams in the Muslim world. And as Ramadan comes to a close this week, fasting during the holy month has impacted how players train and raised questions about which athletes on the pitch will be fasting during these final days. Saudi Arabia plays today, Morocco, Iran, and Egypt play tomorrow. So what does that mean for the Muslim players on soccer's biggest world stage? I asked Shireen Ahmed about all this. She's a sports writer and co-host of the feminist podcast, Burn It All Down.
There's a lot of discussion about whether they'll fast or whether they won't fast and how they'll observe Ramadan. Now, there's not one easy answer to this because, first of all, Muslims are not a monolith. And this might shock some people, but we make our own decisions about things. So particularly in an event such as the World Cup where there's training and it's their work, they might choose not to fast. Also, travelers aren't required to fast. They're expected to make it up later if they're healthy. They could technically not fast under that sort of clause as well. So I'm not sure. I know that the Iranian team does choose to fast, but they will be playing not today. They're playing tomorrow. The first match, I believe, is tomorrow.
And so we're also seeing that there are some very well-known Muslim players who are very open with their faith, both on the field and off the field. How new is that?
See, this is the thing. It's not. I know that because the last World Cup also hit during Ramadan. And the thing is, there was always this discussion, and so did the Euros, about, wow, this is this new thing. Muslims have been around for a really long time, and this isn't new. Footballers have been fasting and competing in major tournaments and championships for a very long time. And the thing we have to remember is that they wouldn't be doing something or observing something if their body hadn't been attuned and accustomed to it. It's not like they woke up all of a sudden and said, hey, we're going to fast today for 17 hours. That's not how it works. It's preconditioning. It's, you know, from a young age being exposed to this kind of practice. And, you know, for those that came to the faith later, it's understanding what it means. And also, these are professional athletes who have dietitians and nutritional experts at their disposal. So it's not as if their diets and their meals and their training sessions haven't been fully planned out.
And in terms of the more the openness and perhaps the prostrating in prayer when there's a goal, what impact could that have on fans who might not be as familiar with Muslim faith or might have their own stereotypical ideas of what it looks like?
I think in terms of bridge building, I think there is an important piece to that. I mean, we've seen Eric Abidal, who played in La Liga for Barcelona. He used to offer supplication and hold his hands up, just like, you know, Mesut Ozil does or Ribery does, who plays for Bayern Munich. It's not new. We've seen Dembaba, who plays for Chelsea, do prostrations. We've seen, and most recently, Mohamed Salah, who is the world's favorite. And I would arguably say the Muslim world favorite. He's playing for Egypt. Now, these aren't new things. Now, it may be new because we've seen them on the periphery, but to make it mainstream is what we're talking about now. To have one of football's most beloved players, Mo Salah, who's been given so many accolades this year, very seamlessly drop into prostration after scoring. So what this does is, and I there's a part of me that doesn't like the normalization of Muslims because we don't need to be normalized. Humanizing people that are already humans is for me, a very different conversation. But to segue that in, and some of the chants that, you know, the Liverpool Football Club supporters have been saying, something like, you know, if he scores again, I'll convert. Like, these are things that shouldn't be taken too lightly, but also there's a certain joy in that because particularly when Islamophobia is definitely on the rise.
And we've also done a segment on the show where we talked about, you know, the potential for, or and not just the potential, but the history of racism, particularly in Russia, in football, in soccer. Have you heard of Muslim players who are dealing with that type of open Islamophobia on the field?
I haven't read anything as such. I mean, the closest I got to hearing about any type of reservations was a player on the English squad. Rose had mentioned that he had warned his family not to attend because they're black. And we've heard concerns from the LGBTIQ community about this, and they're very, very valid. And everybody has a right to be concerned because it's not, we've seen in the past in World Cups, I mean, it's a major tournament, it's a world event. We've seen, you know, militarization, displacement of homeless people, environmental genocide even, and I'm talking about Brazil specifically. We've seen all these things happen. There's human rights abuses while building stadiums. So it's not a big jump to say that we have other concerns in Russia. It's not a concern. As far as Islamophobia goes specifically, I don't think so, because one thing is the players are very heavily guarded. It's the concern for their families and their fans that would be the most pressing.
Shireen Ahmed is a sports writer and co-host of the feminist sports podcast, Burn It All Down. Shireen, thank you for being with us as always.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.